A book is a set of pages filled with words or pictures bound into a square or a rectangle. And it's bound to make you laugh, cry, learn, or wonder. Books are one of the most precious things we have on Earth. But, as we say down here, you don't have to take my word for it.
To the future is my favorite thing. Always talk about it and write songs to sing. Even though there was never a part four, Marty McFly is coming back for more. I don't make money, get no fame. Love for these characters is what I blame. Podcast about comics and cartoons and more. Cause there's still things to explore in Marchy McFly 4. It's Marchy McFly 4. Can you feel it?
Happy Monday, everybody. It's March 18th, 2024, which means it's the 18th day of the fourth year of Marchy McFly. And folks, I may have told you in previous episodes that to make sure I fit everything I want to fit in into this year, I need to do a few episodes where I'm talking about more than one thing. And tonight is one of those episodes, as I'm tackling not one, but two issues of the Back to the Future Untold Tales and Alternate Timelines comic book. I almost forgot what it was. I almost said podcast, but that's what this is. But what I'm holding in my hand is the comic book. Of course, I've talked about issues one and two already. This is a special edition from Newbery Comics. I got it, you know, as every young boy dreams, he gets a comic on his 40th birthday. From good friends Chris and Joanne. So this and every time I read this is dedicated to them if they ever were to somehow come across this. I'm not going to waste any more time because we have a lot to cover. There's four different stories. There's two different issues. So let's get right into it. So first up, we have from issue number 3, In Search of Calvin Marty Klein. Story by John Barber and Bob Gale. Script by John Barber. Script. Make sure I almost sound like I said script. The script's by John Barber. Script by John Barber. Art by Corin Howell. And colors by Jose Luis Rio. This looks like this episode opens up in the 1850s. I'm not entirely sure. I do know that we see Doc working on the train. We see him in some sort of warehouse. And Clara is coming in with Jules and Vern. They're all dressed in their 1850s type garb. He seems to be working on, you know, he has the train up on, I don't know how he has it up on stilts. It looks like he uses a series of pulleys to get it up there, but he figured it out. And Clara's calling from the other room, Emmett. And he doesn't seem to be paying attention. He's like, let's see if the introversion matrix is at 43 degrees. Emmett, then the field coil armature should be at, and then she screams, Emmett. He's like, what? And he hits his head. Oh, what is it? She comes into the workshop to say, your sons were fooling around and wouldn't come when I called. He says, that's terrible. And she said, and neither did you. They get this from your side of the family. He says, you're probably right. We brown boys have a bit of a... Contumacious, C-O-N-T-U-M-A-C-I-O-U-S. You can tell I'm reading this Right here, I didn't pre-read this. Contumacious streak. Contumptuous? Contumptuous. That sounds more like a word. I don't know. Now, mind your mother. After all, you need somebody looking after you, he says to them. And you're not going to believe this. But that reminds me of a story about a couple other kids. So, okay, I think we are in the 1850s. He's still working on the train to get them back to 1985. But now he starts telling a tale from November 22nd, 1958. Ooh, this is exciting. So when it says in search of Calvin Marty Klein, I really thought, okay, this is taking place during Back to the Future, and it's a little like somehow they fit a tale in here. But no, folks, we're going back to the 50s, but to 58, 3 years after Marty left. He was only really there, what was he there, a week? 2 weeks? A week. I could spend a week in 1955. He said it was only a few years after Marty returned to the future. So the kids at this point obviously know Dad's a time traveler. He said, I was having a pleasant afternoon weekend working on my prototype temporal field capacitor, which I believed, quite correctly, by the way, would be the key to building the flux capacitor. And we see outside the beautiful Brown family mansion, still built, still looking good. Maybe he earned it from the money from being Daredevil Brown. Just a thought. I don't know. But he says, but I digress. So he's inside working on this giant thing, which I think is a callback to the time travel thing that he invented for, and he showed the army. I think this is connected, if I remember. He says, pipe wrench, come on, I don't have all day, I need a pipe wrench. He's calling Copernicus to get his tools for him, and of course, Copernicus brings a torque wrench. Oh, that dog. He said, still not bad for your first try, boy. Now, Copernicus, perhaps you could lead me to my toolbox. He says, I seem to have misplaced it. Then all of a sudden, there's a knock at the door. He's like, And even Copernicus goes, He says, my reputation for, let's call it, eccentricity. I swear I can read. Eccentricity would grow after the years, particularly after the fire. But even back then, I had a feeling a visitor on a Saturday morning wasn't delivering good news. So the door opens, and there's a fella there. I'm not exactly sure who he is. I think it is. Doesn't look like the actor all that much, but it's a dude in a green sweater, with a bow tie, looks a little nerdy, and he says, where is he? I need to talk to Calvin Marty Klein right the hell now. He opened, like, he just is yelling at Doc, and it's him. Folks, I have been watching this cartoon for 14 episodes, the animated series, hoping for one glimpse, for one look, for one story with George and Lorraine McFly. And I've yet to be given that. But here we are in the comic, and there he is, Mr. George McFly. He says, George, I mean, what do you mean my nephew? So Doc's caught off a bit off guard. He says, Calvin and his parents moved away after the Enchantment Under the Sea dance. Really? Like he has to say after a specific dance? Why would Doc say he moved away after the high school dance? No, he could have said he moved away in the spring or something 3 years ago. He says, I don't want to hear about the stuff I know. I want the things I don't know. Where is he? Where did he move to? Why hasn't Marty come back to visit? Well, you remember his interest in sailing? He went to college. Wait, isn't that where you should be? Because it's been 3 years. George says, that's the thing, Doc. I can't go back there. It's Lorraine. She's not interested in me anymore. Oh, so everything in Back to the Future has been erased and Marty isn't going to exist again? This is weird. You know what? Though maybe this happened in the original timeline. It just didn't include Doc this time around. Anyway, Doc says, great, Scott. I thought the two of you had already set a wedding date. He's like, we had 1960, which sounded so far in the future. But you know, girls, do you know girls? And Doc says, they defy all scientific logic. Well, college leads you to new things, and Lorraine's found some. Boyfriends? No, nothing like that. It's just that I've been doing pretty dang well for myself. I've had a bunch of short stories published in the Science Fiction Club magazine, you know? Doc says, well, that old chestnut, sci-fi club getting in the way of love. And it's not sci-fi, it's science fiction. And it's not just all that junk you see in the movies or on the late shows. It's respectable. Of course, Doc says. Then George kind of, he got up angry. I mean, he's got a friggin' temper now. I think ever since he punched Biff, he thinks he's the cat's pajamas. So he falls back in the chair. He says, anyway, I'm looking for Marty because he gave me such good advice regarding Lorraine the first time. I figure he's my only hope. That's why he came barging in, because he's looking for advice. And Doc says, wait there 1 minute. He goes into the other room and he says, or two. So he says, wait there 1 minute or two. So he goes off into the other room and he's telling his kids the story. He goes, I didn't have Marty. What I did have was a chilling realization. If George and Lorraine didn't get together, wow, how Boston accent was that? Together. If George and Lorraine didn't get together, Marty wouldn't exist. But we'd been down that road before. Where this was going, I didn't know if there were roads. Ooh, nice line. It doesn't make any sense to the kids unless he's told them everything. After all, the knots were tied in the time stream. The knots we tied in the time stream, the effects of Marty not existing would be, well, I didn't know what they would be, but it wouldn't be good. For the sake of the space-time continuum, no chance could be taken. So he's heading off into his lab. He says, fortunately, your old man is no one-trick pony. Time travel isn't the only thing I ever invented, although not everything worked. So he is grabbing, you know, that giant head thing that he's wearing on his head the first time he ever meets Marty, where he says, he tries to read his mind. He grabs that and he's saying, if there's some way to get this device on Lorraine's head. Wait, he wants to put this on Lorraine's head? Because we can find out what's going on in that head. Maybe a floral pattern? Floral pattern? Again, that Boston accent or that New England accent comes through. I don't live in Boston, but I've lived in Massachusetts almost my whole life, and I've worked in Boston for 20-plus years. So that accent, it pops sometimes, baby. He says, I was quickly learning the McFly family was not good at following instructions. He told George to wait. He says, I told you to wait. But there's someone else at the door. And she says, to wait for what? Dr. Brown, it doesn't matter. Where's your nephew? I need Marty right now. And he's like, what? That can be a problem. What? He says, I need to talk to him. He's the only person who can get George to stop ignoring me. He what? Oh, I suppose I don't care. I can do better. There are other fish in the sea. I'm just adrift in the sea without him. George has just been so full of himself, so into his writing, so swallowed up by his ego, he's forgotten how to laugh at himself. And that has always been his best feature. And Doc says, heavy. Wait there, 1 minute. Wait, or two. So now he heads back to his house and he says, okay, right idea, wrong invention. It all started to add up. I remember back when Marty had arrived. When he came back in time and accidentally stopped his parents from getting back together. I was trying to help him figure out his parental problem and fix his time machine. So now we're jumping back to 1955. This now is happening during Back to the Future, the original. So I like this. But I want to take a moment to think about this. If George and Lorraine don't get together, okay, Marty never exists. If Marty never exists, then he can never come back to tell Doc to invent the time machine. So if the time machine doesn't exist, then Marty never came back to get hit with the car. I like how I like the string theory. Whereas Marty came back, Marty remembers these things, but they change. So if we go with, I believe it's called string theory. If we go with that, Marty, okay, the parents never get together. So Marty doesn't exist in the future, but originally in the original timeline, he did. So Doc does remember him. Doc, Marty still came back and did all that. It's just the Doc growing up now will be like, I have no one to share this with. But in the original timeline, he did. I don't know. I'm overthinking it. So he's like, geez, Doc, I don't know about this. This is my Marty McFly. He says, relax, Marty. Tell me about your father. Marty says, what are you, Sigmund Freud? What about him? Like, what's he like? You know, you've known him your whole life. So I don't know. He's my dad, you know? But he lets himself be pushed around. He lets everybody get in the way of his dreams. Doc says, dreams, huh? Well, what does he want from life? My mom, hopefully. But the thing is, I never even knew this, but he told me he likes to write stories, sci-fi stories. Science fiction, fascinating. Now, hand me a torque wrench. A what? Seems like nobody knows what a torque wrench is. So we're back now in 1958. Well, the tale is in the 1850s, but Doc is telling it in the 1958 timeline. He says, we'd made George assertive, all right. After the dance, he didn't just course correct from being a pushover weakling. He became a self-important jerk. He says, so Doc goes back to George. He goes, I have it. He goes, what, Marty? No, better than Marty. What is it? It's a tiny radio receiver. I got it from Marty's Walkman. Is what? From when Marty and I took a walk, ma'am. So what are you going to do? I'm going to Cyrano de Bergerac you. Huh? You'll talk to Lorraine. But I'll tell you what to say. He goes, how'll that help? It's Lorraine's problem, not mine. Trust me, George. I know exactly what to say. It was all working out so well. He goes, we both did all of this before. So I think we should know what we're doing now. Wait, what? He goes, we both did all this before. So I think we should know what we're doing now. And Lorraine is looking inside. She's peeking inside this part of the house. So she sees them talking to each other. And she goes, he says, everything worked out so well until it wasn't. He's like, what? Doc says, shh, don't move a muscle. Copernicus spotted a raccoon or a coyote. Just wait here a minute or two. So he runs out and he says, if Lorraine saw George and me with the radio, well, she's a smart lady and she'd be able to put two and two together. And that could equal a much harder time to save the time stream. So Emmett goes out and bumps into Lorraine. And she says, I heard you say, he goes, it's not what you think. She goes, Marty's here, isn't he? You were talking to Marty, but you don't want me to know. He goes, yeah, you sure. But why don't you want me to see Marty? He goes, well, he really shouldn't be here. He shouldn't see you here. Does he still have a thing for me? So now she overheard something. Now it looks like he's talking to Lorraine and George is coming to overhear something. He says, or she says, are you afraid of me throwing myself at the mysterious Calvin Marty Klein? And then George is like, wait, what is that? So he heads over. She says, I'll have you know, I'm an adult. I can make my own decisions and I've made up my mind of who I want to be with. But when outside, George goes, but who's she with? Could it be? And inside, she says, stop being coy and give me what I need. Whoa, my goodness. George kicks open the door and says, nobody's giving anybody anything. And Lorraine goes, Marty? George? Doc? George? Great Scott. Lorraine? Woof. Doc? Hey, you get your damn hands off her. Brilliant, perfect, love seeing the line. Doc didn't have his hands on her, but okay. He says, so now George thinks that Doc is with Lorraine? Young. He says, George, wait. Wait has nothing to do with it. Copernicus then helps trip George. George falls into a chair that looks almost like an electric chair. He's like, what the? Whatever you do, don't move a muscle until it's finished its cycle. It is an electric chair. Oh my God. George says, hang on, is this some kind of electric chair? He's on now. Now there's lightning going. Doc says, no. Well, sort of. It's a statomatic electric chair. What's it doing, Doc? What was I doing? This was getting absurd. When Marty stopped his parents from meeting, that was change we had to fix. But this, using knowledge of the future to attempt to, to control it? But then, he seems to, whatever happened, seems to blow George's hair up so it looks really like, almost like Einstein. And Lorraine looks at him, he looks at her, and she goes, ha! And then he's getting all angry, and she goes, he starts laughing a little bit. Then he looks in the mirror, and he starts laughing. And she's laughing, and he's laughing. She says, my knight in shining static electricity. And George goes, I'm your density. So Doc and Copernicus leave them alone. He says, I almost prevented nature from taking its rightful course. Marty and I fixed a mistake, but you can't go through life fine-tuning everything. Everybody until they're just what you think they should be. Sometimes life takes care of itself. So you hear them saying, hey, you want to go see a movie, Lorraine? Something romantic? There's this new one called From the Earth to the Moon that sounds perfect. Oh, George, I hope you never change. Then we cut back to 1850, and it looks like Clara's working on the train while Doc has been telling this story. She says, there. I adjusted the armature. Anybody could see the angles were off. But you're right. You have to let things take their own course. And Jules says, okay, but doesn't that story prove Mom should have left me and Vern alone? Details. It's just got to prove nothing's perfect. Not even time. Except for one time. Yeah, bedtime. We get it, Mom. And Clara says, like your father said, mind your mother. Heh, a lesson I learned the hard way. But that's another story. Mind your mother. Ooh, I wonder if we'll see something with Doc's mother. But that's the end of the story In Search of Calvin Marty Klein. Let's not waste any more time and jump over to the next story in issue number 3, Jurassic Biff. The cover shows an old man Biff with dinosaurs. He's holding up his cane. He says, what are you looking at, butthead? And this cover art by Tony Fleeks. Story and script by Eric Berman and Bob Gale. Bob Gale again. Art by Alan Robinson and colors by Jose Luis Rio. You've noticed Robert Zemeckis directed the 3 movies. But I feel like Bob Gale is the guy who's like, really holding on to Back to the Future and expanding the universe and taking, you know, he's staying with it. He's not leaving it behind. He knows this is where his bread is buttered. So yeah, Jurassic Biff is getting, looks like he's getting spit on by a dinosaur. Exciting. So we're jumping right over to this story, and it looks like it picks up in 2015. And this is an interesting little tale with Biff watching Doc and Marty as Doc is throwing away Gray's Sports Almanac. Previously, on October 21st, 2015, 78-year-old Biff Tannen saw Doc Brown's veto Marty's plan to bring a sports almanac back through time and become rich via sports betting. Realizing the brilliance of the idea, Biff retrieved the book and borrowed the DeLorean time machine when Doc and Marty left it unattended. Really a dumb premise when you think about it. He says, now Biff flies off, intending to give the almanac to his teenage self. But there's one problem. How do you work this damn thing? Voice activation, maybe? Hello? On? Anybody home? Hey, I want to go back to 1955. Maybe this handle switch does something with the keypad. When all else fails, he's pressing stuff. He whacks the time circuit, the control panel, with his fist cane, I guess you could call it. So this is telling the story of what happened to Biff when he stole the time machine. And he punches the time circuits. He seems to go somewhere. He goes, that's right. That did something. Okay, it's day, so I must have traveled through some time. But wait, that's the friggin' ocean. If Hill Valley's underwater, what year is this? Did the big one take out California? So he thinks he's way in the future. Oh, this can't be good. Now the time circuits are on the fritz. Hey, this also explains why they were on the fritz later. Because Biff messed with them. Ooh, I kind of like this, because won't this kind of, you know, remember it was acting up when they head back to 1955. And then it's acting up that caused Doc to go back to 1885. It says, now we need fuel for Mr. Fusion. I mean, does he know what Mr. Fusion is? He goes, there better be, well, maybe Mr. Fusion does multiple things. Like Mr. Fusion is a thing in 2015. It just so happens that in this car, it helps fuel a time machine. So we know, maybe he knows what Mr. Fusion is. Like Mr. Coffee, which I still have a Mr. Coffee machine in my kitchen. I use it every day to make iced coffee. He says, there better be something on shore I can shove in this chamber. Oh, because he knows to throw something in Mr. Fusion. So he's looking around and just a bunch of trees and fruit. He says, no low-hanging fruits or branches. So much for organic fuel. Guess it's just going to have to be my clothes and this, my lucky shirt. So he's going to use his shirt in Mr. Fusion. All of a sudden he hears something. Who's there? And it's a velociraptor. He goes, okay. I think I went back a little further than I thought. Yeah, I saw that Spielberg movie back in the day. Mr. Raptor, I ain't going to be no dino dinner. See, he saw Mr. Raptor. I mean, he saw Jurassic Park. It took place, what, 3 years after Back to the Future 3? He says, what are you looking at, butthead? Make like a tree and leave. He's telling this to a velociraptor. You deaf, or just stupid numbnuts. I said, get out of here. You smell some Chinese food from the trash can, huh? So now the velociraptor sticks its head in the car and it steals the gray sports almanac. He says, you lousy thief, bring that back. That's mine. He gets in the DeLorean and chases it. Now he knows how to drive the DeLorean perfectly. He's chasing this. Well, I guess he's been driving flying cars. So it's not, unbelievable. He says, let's just hope Mr. Fusion doesn't run dry. Yeah, you can run, but you can't hide. So he's chasing this velociraptor. He leans out, whacks the velociraptor on the head with his cane. The thing goes scree, and it drops the sports almanac. He says, and Biff scores. He says, back in the biz, and I think I can operate this sucker now. Just got to remember where I was on a certain date, November 12, 1955, and arrive early. There. Fortune and fame, here we come. Biff Tannen, fueled for the future. And then we see him kind of jump through a time hole. He says, or is it the past? Boom. The end. The end of issue number 3. But folks, I told you, this is a double up. We're doing this again. We're bringing it right back. We're starting over with two new stories from issue number 4. The first one is called Peer Pressure, and the second one is called Emmett Brown Visits the Future. First, let's talk about peer pressure. I hate peer pressure. Don't you hate peer pressure? Come on. You hate peer pressure. Come on, you hate it. Admit you hate it. Come on, it's cool to hate peer pressure. Come on, admit it right now. Just admit it, will you? See what I did there? Brilliant. Okay, so we're back in 1885 again. The art's a little different. So this is a story by John Barber and Bob Gale again, a script by John Barber, art by Ryan Brown, and colors by J Photos. F-O-T-O-S, but it's photos, unless it's photos. Photos. He should be a photographer with an F. Boom. So Doc is leaving a house and Clara's like, Emmett. So, yeah. Yes, Clara, dear. If you're going to go out to the lab, could you at least look for my lesson book? I swear I left it somewhere. I mean, of course it's somewhere, but yes, dear. Yes. I'll send the boys to see if they can see it. Emmett, are you feeling ill? Today doesn't seem like an overcoat day. He's wearing his coat, but she's like, why are you wearing that? It was just fine, dear. Just a little chill. Just fine. No, totally fine. Looks like they're in her. I mean, where are they? Because it looks like they're in her, the house she lives in, but now he's heading over to his barn, which I guess he still lives in. So he still has the barn. That makes sense. Why would he get rid of that? He was there for years. You know what? I used to say originally his plan bothered me because he was leaving all these horses behind, but he lived in 1885 for many more years, raising his children. So I'd like to think that he kept those horses and took care of them and either found them homes or, you know, were there for them for their entire lives. Okay. Anyway. So he's heading over to his barn, and maybe he has this hidden. Maybe she doesn't know about this yet, but he goes, whew, goes in there, pulls out what looks like a giant, almost like an ice pick, a needle of some point. I'm not sure. And there in front of him is the giant train. It doesn't look fully decked. No, actually, I do see a flux capacitor on it. So this is the train. And we see two little heads peeking out behind him in the shadows. So Doc's like, all right, align down and the flux capacitor will flow negative to positive. Align up. So it looks like he's tweaking something, and all of a sudden the kids yell, Dad! He goes, what? Great Scott! Is that any way to greet your old man? It's like, sorry, da. Sorry, da. Is that the flax capacitor? No, it's nothing. Just another piece, another step closer, small advancement after another. You know how science goes. I can't lie to my boys. Well, then why are you trying to hide it from Mom? I know she says she wants to leave with me, but her whole life has been this time period. Time travel has always been an abstract. There's something that we'd have to deal with someday, but someday is today. Oh my goodness, wait. Is this happening right now? This is the day they decide to go? Oh my goodness. He says, it wouldn't be the first time that I've kept something from someone I cared about. He goes, let me guess. It reminds you of a story. So once again, we have Doc telling a story. And now we go back to November 26th, 1984. He goes, everything reminds me of a story, son. But this is a story about a lesson I didn't learn until much, much later. He had been helping me at the lab for a few years by the time these events occur. And I trusted him implicitly. Implicitly, I can read. But that doesn't mean I told Marty McFly everything. As a young man in Hill Valley, he surely had much to deal with without my concerns concerning him. Okay, so this isn't 19. I thought that we were going to see, well, why would we see Marty in the events of 1985? We saw those. We saw the moment that Doc showed up with the train. So we're going, I thought we were seeing needles. Oh, we are seeing needles, but this is back in 1984. Which I guess is a year before. It's only a year before. Okay. All right. So Marty's going, excuse me, coming through. Hey. Oh, hi, Jennifer. From fourth grade, right? In a few other grades. So they're not dating yet. He goes, yeah. I mean, I was just walking. I noticed and I remember. Hey, baby. So now a truck pulls up. Needles. Marty's like, me, not really the time. No time like the present, Jenny. Jennifer. And I was talking to Marty. I know. That's why I was trying to save you. Very funny, Needles. Flea. Even in the cartoon, Flea looks 50 years old. I was going to say Flea. Needles says, a lady like you deserves someone special, not my fly here. What are you going to do? Talk to that little, you know, take her out on a little skateboard? Hey, come on, Jenny, let me treat you right. And there's a girl in the car sitting next to her. She's like, hey, slaps him right on the face. He's like, relax, doll. Plenty of me to go around. Boom, smacked in the face. He's like, we'll paint the town red. No thanks. Your loss. Catch you later, McFly. You too, Jenny. She's like, look at that car. Yeah, that's really something. Really, Marty, I didn't think you were the type. See you later. She goes, really, really, Marty? I didn't think you were the type. See you later. What does that mean? So she was really into that truck. Maybe that's why he wanted that truck so bad. Think about it. put a couple of sleeping bags in the back, head up to the lake. Does your mom know? Get out of town. My mom thinks I'm going camping with the guys. All right, sorry. I get lost in this sometimes. So she doesn't seem, I mean, they're not dating yet. So he's like, huh, what does that mean? Because she goes, I didn't think you were that type. The automobile had arrived a few months earlier. Oh, wait, what car were they looking at? Oh, no, she was looking at the truck. But now we're jumping over. And I typically kept it as my in my secret workshop. But that day, I had some special modifications to make. There were significant alterations necessary to make the automobile time-worthy. So now we see Doc with Einstein in the his workshop with the DeLorean there. He goes, a series of facts I concealed from my young assistant. So you remember, Marty knows Doc, but he had no idea about the DeLorean. So Doc has the DeLorean uncovered, and Marty's like, you home, Doc? He's like, oh, one moment, Marty. And he covers it up, and obviously you can see it's a car, but he's like, hi, Einstein. What do you know about women, Doc? I mean, again, this is almost two stories in a row where people are coming to Doc for advice. He's like, what, women? They defy all scientific logic. Isn't that the same exact line he said in the last one? He's like, you said a mouthful. There's this girl at school. He goes, of course there is. She was talking to me, but then that jerk Needles came up and he's got a driver's license and a car and everything. And on top of that, I just let him roll right over me. What's a girl like Jennifer ever going to see in a guy like me? Doc says, I'm sure she finds a fully functioning epidermis. And if you want to keep it, I'm sure she sees a fully functioning epidermis. And if you want to keep it that way, don't lean. I've upgraded the security system. Very sensitive. Oh, so I guess, I don't know. I'm sure you recall the domino effect. Maybe if that's what he's telling, I guess he's telling Marty, don't lean on this because the security system will, I don't know, kill you. He says, maybe if I acted like Needles, I mean, you know, not like Needles, but confident like Needles. She'd see me, you know, see how cool I can be too. I do cool stuff, right, Doc? Cool. What's temperature have to do with it, Marty? I mean, come on. I get not understanding heavy in the 50s, but cool in the 80s. He says, no, I mean, oh, never mind. He says, I know what cool means, Marty. I was employing a metaphor. What I mean is cool hasn't anything to do with anything. Huh? Never care what other people think about you, Marty. That's no way to live your life. He says, it's worked out for you. I've got Einstein in my invention. What else is there, Marty? Yeah. He looks over. He sees the tire underneath. He almost looks at it. He's like, good point, Doc. So now we jump over to November 27th, 1984, and Doc is telling the story. He says, Marty spent the next school day avoiding the Jennifer girl and the rest of the afternoon taking out his frustration as a young man does. And we see him in some sort of mini mart. And what's he doing? He's doing something that we never saw Marty McFly do. He's playing wild gunman. He says, take that and that. Not so fast, hombre. So he's playing Wild Gunman, a game that, you know, we never saw him play ever until Back to the Future 2 in the future in Cafe 80s. And we see someone behind him say, nice shooting, Clint. He says, you got the wrong guy. My name's Jennifer. And then he turns and he's pointing the gun at her for some reason, even though they're toy guns. She puts her hands up jokingly. She goes, what a coincidence. Don't shoot, Mr. Eastwood. I'm unarmed. And he says, yeah, sorry. Wait, you like Clint Eastwood? He says, I think he's cool. Yeah, me too. So again, he's being called Clint Eastwood for the first time in 1984. Interesting. She's like, I missed you at school. He said, yeah, it was a busy day. She goes, yeah, I can see that. Your guy died. Life was cheap in the old West. Really? Was it a little foreshadowing? He goes, I was thinking, yeah, I tried that once. Yeah, what I mean is, well. Oh, we don't have a Biff. We have a Needles. Still, I think Needles should be Needles Tannen. I feel like that should have come out. He goes, looky what we got here, which, again, right now, it really seems like it, right? Looky what we got here. He shows up, and the guy behind the counter who looks just like the Dunkin' Donuts guy from the 80s and 70s says, hey, I told you before, you want to come in here, you got to buy something. He's like, sure. You start ringing this up while I browse. He throws these chips right in this guy's face. He goes, McFly, Needles, and Jenny. Now, this is a classy place to take a date. I hear they got a special combo deal on hot dogs and nachos. Buzz off, she said. He goes, yeah, it's not a date. I mean, I know it's not a date, McFly. Dates are at places. Places that don't suck. With guys that don't suck. Anyway, I'm going to go pick up my girlfriend and drive her somewhere cool in my car. Chicks loves car. Chick loves... Chunk loves sloth. Chicks love cars. And they love guys who have cars. Now that, not that you would know anything about it. Because I changed my mind on those chips. Cholesterol, he just walks out. It's like, what is it with you two? He says, listen, Jennifer, I got to go. So he bails. And Doc's telling the story. He goes, I don't know what Marty thought he was going to do. Adolescence. It's not a time I'm looking forward to with you boys. I realized later Marty knew I had a secret. An automobile. But of course, he didn't know what that vehicle was or what it would mean to us. In his confused mind, maybe he thought he could impress Jennifer. Oops, that almost came out of genital. Maybe he thought he could impress Jennifer, and I never know what I'd never know what he did. Maybe at the moment, it didn't matter even if I did find out. Like I told Marty, I never much cared about what other people think. You go, Doc, you go. He says, but Marty did. And he's like, oh, he goes to the lab. He knows there's a car under there. He's like, he sneaks in. He's looking at it. He's like, oh, I'm being a jackass. Oh, I'm sorry, Doc. I got to get out of here. And all of a sudden, why, McFly? When the night's still young. So they followed him to Doc's place. He's like, oh, man. Yeah, a real man, McFly. Thanks for opening up the old Coots lab. I played you like a guitar. I didn't even need to call you chicken this time. So even these people know that you can call this kid a chicken and he just falls for things. So, I mean, he's being played all over the place. He says, so what's the prize, huh? And he starts taking the cloth off and he says, get your hands off that, Needles. Flea, Needles, looks over and says, McFly? Punches him right in the face. Who do you think you are? Yeah, and all his other people are laughing and hollering. And then Doc comes out of nowhere and says, he's my assistant. And Einstein goes, woof. Needles says, so what? So this. And then Marty knocks over a bunch of dominoes that knock a ball. They get a tire spinning. They get a balloon pumping. They then get this giant thing of paint in a bucket to fall on top of Needle's head. I think that was the security system Doc was talking about earlier. Now even his friends are laughing at him. Ha, ha, ha. He goes, let's roll, Dougie. I think the town painted you. Let's roll, Dougie. Douglas Needles. Is that his name? Douglas Needles? I forget. He says, Doc says, get that trash out of my laboratory. Tomorrow's problem, Marty. Tonight. Oh, he says, he's going to beat me up for that. He says, that's tomorrow's problem, Marty. Tonight is this. What are you doing here? I was being a jerk, Doc. I was about to let you down big time. I understand if you want me out of here. It's like, Marty, I know the travails of youth are no picnic. I know you have thoughts and feelings when you're not here. But I understand that I need to be able to keep secrets too. Yeah, I know. I mean, how bad can your secrets be? Is it a flying car or something? No, not a terrible idea, but that's beside the point. A flying car. Woo-hoo, the future. He says, you don't have to be me, Marty. Don't keep your feelings from this girl secret. What's the worst that can happen? Well, she punches me right in the face. Well, at least you'll be symmetrical, because he has another black eye from Needles. So Marty asked Jennifer out, and she said yes. And one thing led to another, and while I confess I never knew what to do with her, Marty seemed happy. It wasn't anything I understood. Oh, I had Einstein by my side, and how I missed the old boy. Oh, wait. At Einstein by my side, I know how I've missed the old boy. My human companionship, that wasn't anything I needed. Oh, but human companionship, that wasn't anything I needed. Oh, I think now that he was seeing Jennifer so much, he didn't see Marty as much. He didn't see Doc as much because I missed the old boy. But I human companionship, that wasn't anything I needed. Hey, I have my wife and I have my dog. And I have you, the listening audience. What else could a boy ask for? So he's still telling the story. He goes, Dr. Emmett Brown was above such nonsense. Until I met your mother, that is. Then it all made sense. Clara comes in and goes, well, that's nice to hear. That's also cute to hear that you thought you were keeping secrets from me. You're a terrible liar, Emmett. But I've been doing it my whole life. Not to me. Now, Emmett, you must know I'd follow you anywhere. And seeing the world of tomorrow has always been my greatest dream as well. So no sense in time wasting. When can we go back? Back where? Vern says. And Emmett says, oh, Emmett doesn't even say it. Oh, I love that even more. He just smiles. Because, you know, Claire was going to say, back to the bathroom because I had a really bad breakfast burrito. And they're like, 1885, what's a breakfast burrito? Obviously, it's, you know, someone's going to say Back to the Future. So that was great. And now we come to the final. This is a long episode. I told you. Here it is. The final story of this, the second story from book four, issue number four. Emmett Brown visits the future. Story by Bob Gale and Eric Burnham. Script by Bob Gale. Art by Eric Everson. Colors by Jose Luis Rio. And oh my goodness gracious, there's a little asterisk and it says Action Comics number one appears courtesy of DC Comics. I'm so excited. I have no idea. I've never read this story, but I'll tell you what the cover looks like. It's a very cartoony looking drawing of Marty. And it's a big mix of Marty. He's got the hat and gloves that he wore in Back to the Future 2 when he went back to 1885. I mean, in 1955. He's got the Nike Future shoes. He's got the hoverboard. And he's wearing the quote-unquote, you know, Western Clint Eastwood shirt that Doc gave him in the new 1955 at the beginning of Part 3. He is being chased by multiple Tannen. So we have a Biff Tannen from 1985, the alternate version with the gun, the rich one. We have Biff from 1955 in the car. We have Griff on the hoverboard with the bat. We have Biff from 2015. Okay. Then we get some Biffs we've never seen. We have a gladiator Tannen. We have one dude driving a dinosaur. We have another, wait a minute, that was like Attila the Hun and a gladiator. We have a head in a jar, maybe in the future. We have one that looks kind of like a pirate or a musketeer. We have a dude who has some sort of scar on his face, almost like a gangster in the 20s, and with a big lasso trying to reel in Marty, we have Buford Mad Dog Tannen. That cover art is by James Silvani. I would like that. I would like this in a frame. That's a lot of fun. I really like that. So let's get to this story, which, you know, these stories are always a little shorter. So this is how we're going to finish up with a nice little fun tale. See, now the art inside the cover of the story, which probably has nothing to do with the story because it's just the second story in an issue, is very cartoony. But when you go inside, it's a little, I wouldn't say, I mean, it's comic book, so it's cartoony, but it's a little more like a well-defined drawing, not overly cartoonish drawing. He's recording something, Doc Brown is. I think we're in 1985, but it isn't. Well, maybe we'll find out. He says, Dr. Emmett L. Brown, audio log, one of the series recounting my very first visit to the year 2015. He goes, that is one version of 2015, the present time. Well, time has no meaning when you're a time traveler. October 26, 1985, approximately 1:45 a.m. after Marty rejoined me at the mall, I loaded a plutonium pellet in the DeLorean, packed up my remaining cartridges, and accompanied my by Einstein, took Marty home. So this is the end of Back to the Future. That night, Doc drops Marty back at home. He says, as Marty heads to his house, I set my destination for August 8th, 2015. That's 4 days after my 39th birthday. And he headed to the future. Instantaneously, we arrived in the future. What marvels awaited? What wonders would be experienced? The funny thing is, if you look at 2015 for real, it looks just like 1985. There's different technologies. There's all kinds of advances in things. But the world around you doesn't look any futuristic. Doesn't look any different. So he says, I boldly drove into town, certain that no one in 2015 would be concerned about seeing a car that was 33 years old. But I was definitely not prepared for what we saw. So he goes, wait, what? He says, this couldn't be 2015. The time travel must have malfunctioned. Okay, so he says he's setting a time to 2015. He goes to 2015, and everything looks like the 80s. He says, the time machine must have malfunctioned or not. Clearly, nostalgia remains still in force. Everything looked 80s around him. There's a family with a guy dressed in the Michael Jackson jacket, with a kid in a Ninja Turtle and another girl wearing a Reagan shirt. They have a Pac-Man balloon. I see a Ghostbuster. I see a, there's no DeLorean because that wouldn't be, well, there could be a DeLorean, but it wouldn't be a time machine. I think this woman's supposed to be Sigourney Weaver in Ghostbusters as well. It says it's in the Hill Valley 1980s car expo. And so I wonder if he does something to make the future really the future. Because this is what 2015 probably looked like. Trans Ams, is that a Ferrari for a Magnum PI? So I guess Doc Brown enters this car thing and he says, first prize goes to the DeLorean Hot Rod owned by Mr. Emmett. A few judges weren't crazy about some of the modifications, but we were all so excited just to see a real DeLorean. He says, you get the grand prize, 10% off a hover conversion at my shop worth $39.95. I thought it was $39.99.95. A hover conversion? Oh! It was great, Scott. Cars flew. This was indeed 2015. And it was the first time for me to experience the real future. Or it was time for me to experience the real future. So he just happened to drive to a 1980s convention, won a gift certificate to Goldie Wilson III's Hover Convention Emporium, and boom, that's how we got the DeLorean to fly. That is kind of awesome, if that's the truth. He says the courthouse was now a shopping center, and flying cameras called drones were ubiquitous. Now, this is okay. When was this story written? These stories were written in, you know, the 2000s, right? So they're not, this story isn't telling you a story from 1990 going drones were, you know, cameras. Because yes, and the funny thing is, the drone in the drawing looks more like a drone you'd actually see than I think the drones we saw in the movie. It says commercials were on 3D billboards and just as obnoxious, and good manners had become a thing of the past. So some guy bumps into him and goes, "Tirk off, old man." Then I saw it, a Mr. Fusion power converter. Ooh, I love this. I love getting filled in when Doc left to when Doc came back. How did he do it? How the DeLorean now flew and now used a Mr. Fusion. How long was he gone? And how do we get there? This story is telling that tale, and it's written by Bob Gale. So I'm calling this canon. It says the Mr. Fusion power converter. It would solve all my electrical energy needs. But it wasn't cheap. It was $8,200. Because I still needed $36,000 to cover the conversion, plus the exorbitant California sales tax. Of course, my credit cards were expired. Not that I had any credit. See, it's funny. In the cartoon, Vern uses his credit cards to buy something in the 2090s. So, I mean, that's, at least in this one, they're you know, being a little more logical. So wait, I thought he said, he says, 10% off my, oh, the 10% off the conversion was $39.95, because the conversion was $39.99.95. I think I'm getting that right. Whatever it is, he still needed $36,000. So it wasn't 30. I'm overthinking it. So he says, luckily I had the foresight to bring some silver dollars, family heirlooms that I assumed would only escalate in value, but not enough. So he brings these coins and he goes, sorry, to the Hill Valley stamp and coin shop. Sorry, he's not in the best condition. 6,300 is as high as I could go. So Doc doesn't have the money to get the conversion, but he still has the, he has the time machine. So he doesn't need to get back right away. He's no rush. And he still has the plutonium. He says, my future depended on funding. And the most valuable thing I had was the secret of time travel. But that wasn't for sale. I realized that back in 1962. Going back to the time of the army coming to talk to him. He goes, but perhaps I owned or had access to some materials that had escalated in value in 2015. I decided to find out. So he goes to that Blast from the Past store, and he's looking around and seeing all these things. He's like, He sees an Atari worth $4,500. He sees a VCR worth $45. A VCR for only $65. So these things aren't really going up all that much. I see a He-Man, a Teddy Ruxpin, an old Apple computer, a Macintosh computer, a Thriller poster, a Reagan Bush 84, and an old cell phone. It was clear I was looking in the wrong place. He doesn't even know what a cell phone is in 1985. So then he goes to the Hill Valley Public Library. He goes, what do you mean? You never heard of the internet? He's like, sorry, I've been away. So someone's yelling about the internet. He has no idea, because I figured out quickly enough. And in moments, I was able to access the prices of gold, silver, diamonds, and rare materials. Great Scott. So that's the single greatest investment in the history of man. Next stop. Oh, my goodness gracious. April 18th, 1938. I'm getting excited just thinking about this. Whoosh. He goes back to now. So while he's in 2015, before he comes back to Marty and Jennifer to talk to them about their kids, he travels back to 1938. And he hides his car behind a billboard, just like Marty did, behind the $875 Studebaker billboard. He says, I left Einie to guard the vehicle, and I headed into town. He walked into Hill Valley, 2 miles. He says, we hear him say, that'll be $1. Sir, would you like a bag? Yes, please. That'll be $1. What did he buy for $1? Oh, my goodness gracious. Because I was going to say, wasn't it 10 cents? He goes, and with that one silver dollar investment, I was fixed for life. I had money in the bank with no bank required. And then he goes back to 2015. Because I'm telling you, he goes back to this guy who's, I don't know what he's saying. He goes, I just made the deal of the century. This guy insisted on cash, so I got him at rock bottom. He goes, that's right. That's right, Harry. I bought a near mint comic of Action Comics number one for only $2.5 million. I'm going to price it at $3 million. So he sold one of his Action Comics near mint. He just bought it for $2.5 million. Because that old man was clueless. He had no idea what he had. Some people are just dumb. He bought it for 10 cents. Oh, and that's the end of the issue. That's the end. Oh, my goodness gracious. So now he knew how he can afford to do all this stuff, because he went back to 1938 and bought 10 versions, 10 issues of Action Comics number one. Folks, if you don't know, I do an Action Comics comic book, and I cover Action Comics number one. It's called Reaction Comics, and I ask you to check it out. It's a totally separate comic podcast that you can find at fansonexperts.com. Now, the thing about this story, and I like it, I like the idea of it, but Would Doc Brown actually do that? Now, I know we see he has money from various time periods. We see that in Back to the Future 2. Why doesn't he use that money? Maybe he needs to keep that money for different times. He doesn't have future money. I don't know. He did have future. He had to have had future money. Or maybe he didn't. I don't know. You'd think all that money was probably planned before the Libyans showed up. So that kind of, that makes sense there, I guess. But would he actually, it's how different is that from Marty taking the Gray Sports Almanac and making bets? I mean, I guess it's cheating because you know who won already. But this is like, I'm cheating by buying these at 10 cents, knowing I can sell at least one or multiple for 2.5 million each. That being said, if I had a time machine, that would be one of the things I would do. Everyone wants to talk about killing Hitler. I'm sure I would do that. But I would also, I'd go back to 1938 and I'd do two things. You take care of Hitler and you get Action Comics number one. Those are the two great things. And try not to bump into my grandparents, because I want to make sure that my parents are born and I'm born and all that stuff. So I think that is the ultimate takeaway from all of this. You know, I've just read four stories from Back to the Future, and I can't get over the fact that one of them is a kind of built on the fact that Doc made all this money in the future from Action Comics number one. And it makes me very, very happy to find that out. And I almost wish I didn't read the fine print that said Action Comics being used, you know, in partnership with DC Comics. I almost wish I didn't see that. But this was a long one tonight, folks. I mean, look at this. At one point, I was using GarageBand, and it was bothering me, so I recorded the rest of the audio in Zoom. And even with the Zoom talk, I've gone over an hour. So, I mean, I've gone way over an hour. This is definitely the longest, but it's a double issue story and a double issue episode. So I knew it was going to be long. But that's it. I'm done. Listen, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Mastodon.social, and Blue Sky at Geek Mentality. You can find the show on Facebook at Fans Not Experts. I should say the website on Fans Not Experts on Facebook. And you can find every episode of Geek Mentality on the YouTube channel, just Fans Not Experts. If you like listening to audio videos on YouTube, go to Fans Not Experts. We have some actual videos, but most of our stuff is just audio episodes of our shows, just the shows that you're listening to now. And of course, fansnotexperts.com is the website where you can find everything that you need to entertain you and your entire family and at least 14 of your friends. So that's it. I'm done. I just saw today that Star Wars is coming out with a new show in June, which means it's going to be very busy for me over at my other podcast, my Star Wars podcast, Mandalorian Man, and at the same time doing 30 movie podcasts. But I like the 30 movie podcasts are literally the easiest thing I do. Because there's nothing creative, no thought, nothing like, I just watch it. I don't even I watch it and I give my thoughts instantaneously. I'll talk for 15, 20 minutes maybe, and that's it. And then I got to, you know, stick my face on a poster and put that on Instagram. But that's probably all this, this fun monthly stuff all goes back to that. And it's going to be my 11th year coming up, which is crazy. All right, now I'm done. I want to get this over with. I want to go watch wrestling. Look, I'm a 47-year-old child, and I need to go watch wrestling. So have a good night. I'll see you tomorrow. And until next time, which is tomorrow, here is my theme song.
This is my podcast. I made it. Geek Mentality is what I named it. And I think you should listen and subscribe. Cause I'm kinda funny and awesome. I think that I'm worth your time. And I'm kinda handsome. My mom says, please listen and please subscribe. At least listen to this episode.
Fans Not Experts.